Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you. It's Thursday, the 5th of March. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, a deadline for the warring parties in South Sudan to form a government of national unity expires today. But the rebels are demanding the creation of two separate armies.
You cannot go to any agreement without having a two army, because that two army will actually guarantee the security of the whole implementation of the peace process for 30 months.
And seven former top officials from Kenya face corruption charges in a multi-million dollar scam involving bogus state contracts, dating back to the days of Arap Moi.
We want to see the big fish in the dock also, so that we can see at least there is some transparency that is ongoing, there is justice that at least will be done at the end of the day. So we want to see the big fish, not the small fish alone, because they could not do this without being authorized by the big men.
Those stories and more on this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
We begin in South Sudan, where President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are expected to form a unity government today, as a deadline set by regional mediators expires. The deadline was imposed by the regional body IGAD in order to put pressure on the warring factions to end their conflict. In the past, they have signed several peace agreements, but have carried on fighting. DW's correspondent Coletta Wanjoe is following their most recent round of talks in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
The warring parties only began their face-to-face consultations 3 days ago to the deadline. President Salva Kiir's late arrival in Addis Ababa has, however, not watered down the expectation for a proper peace deal. Emmanuel Paul, a member of the civil society from South Sudan, says that the timing of arrival doesn't matter. It is the action that the president will put in the negotiation to save South Sudan.
It's arrived late, but we don't know whatever is in briefcase is coming with. But we believe it's a man enough to resolve this issue with his colleague.
Among the key issues discussed were the position and powers of the vice president in the transitional government, accountability and how justice will be served to the people of South Sudan, and finally, the controversial issue of security. Gadoth Gadquoth, the deputy chief of general staff for logistics of the rebels, says that the rebel faction wants its own army as an independent organ in the new government.
We cannot go to any agreement without having a two army. Because that two army will actually guarantee the security of the whole implementation of the peace process for 30 months. Because it's not simple, it's not very easy to amalgamate the forces which is fighting themselves for a period of 1.5 years.
This, however, is not agreeable to the government so far, but is at the disposal of President Kiir and rebel leader Machar to deliberate on. Gideon Mabor, an independent analyst who is also a member of the security negotiating team, has raised concerns whether results would be achieved in the short period of time left.
The amount of work that the technical committee, that the thematic working group has forwarded to the principal is an indication of a failure, because principal are not negotiators. They are supposed to bless the political matters that are of significant importance. But if you can move the whole negotiation process to the principal, that is a clear indication of the failure.
With the looming sanctions ahead, should the two sides fail to reach an agreement, South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin has asked the international community to help his country pave the road rather than create new obstacles.
Coletta Wanjoe, 2 days before Thursday's deadline, the UN Security Council decided to increase the pressure on the two sides in South Sudan by drawing up a list of possible sanctions. But did this threat of punitive action come at the right time? My colleague Assumpta Latas put that question to Annette Weber from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs in Berlin.
That's a very good question. If we look at the conflict in South Sudan, one might wonder why everything is taking so long, because basically what we need was clear since December 2013. I think the unwillingness or inability, we don't know, but more it seems more an unwillingness for the two sides to really come to an agreement did not just appear yesterday. I mean, we see that since the IGAD mediation is going on. So in this sense, yes, of course, it comes at the right time. It should have come much earlier in terms of if one believes that putting pressure on the two sides will help them getting closer to each other. But this is, of course, the crucial question. Will putting pressure really do the trick? So far, nothing else has really helped. And I think, therefore, the announcement of the sanctions a day ahead of the 5th of March deadline makes sense.
This is not the first time, and probably it won't be the last time, that the UN is threatening to sanction South Sudan. I mean, to me, it sounds like, you know, a parent threatening or giving a warning to a child. But every time, if you're not consequent, then nothing will happen. I don't know what you think about that.
I think it's very tricky because the consequence is lacking. Now, even if the UN Security Council will go for a sanction mechanism, what we all know is that it also comes down to the neighboring countries, how serious they are to carry through with any sanctions. I mean, we know that the main assets and the interest of the leaders and the interest of those who the UN would like to impose the sanctions on are in the neighboring countries, are in Kenya, are in Uganda, and partially in Ethiopia. So you cannot disconnect the sanctions and IGAD. This would have to come much closer. And this, of course, is very tricky if on one side you have IGAD as negotiators and on the other side you would have IGAD as the implementers of the sanctions.
So what you're suggesting is that the sanctions won't work anyway if they're going to happen?
No.
Okay.
No, I wish they would work. I mean, I wish they would not have to need to work. I wish the sanctions would not be necessary. I wish the negotiations and the rationality of the two sides would lead to an agreement that everybody can live with. That's what I wish for. But I think it cannot just be an agreement between two people. It has to be an agreement where many more voices are considered and many more sides will feel that they matter.
Annette Weber, you're listening to Africa Link.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Let's head now to Lesotho, where the main opposition party, the Democratic Congress, or DC, has announced that it will form a coalition government with several of the smaller parties following elections on Saturday. As Dimpo Motsamai, an analyst from the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria, told Assumpta Lartis, the new administration would seek to wrest power from the ABC-LCD coalition.
The agreement that was announced by the DC to form a coalition government with the other small parties is not surprising at all because, number one, the DC came into the election with already a coalition agreement signed between them and the LCD last year. So there was an existing coalition agreement between the DC and the LCD as they came into the election. What was remaining was to find those other small parties to add up the numbers so that they could reach the threshold of 61 seats or more of forming government. The announcement that was made yesterday by the DC of this new coalition is an interesting one because all the parties are seen to be what they call Congress parties. Yeah, in Lesotho, you've got two political dichotomies. You have Congress parties and national parties. And the parties that are now announced to be supporting the DC's coalition are Congress parties. And the total number from yesterday's announcement is 63 seats in Parliament out of 120 total seats in the legislature.
Let's assume that this new announcement of a coalition government done by the DC is going to be true. Will the new government be in position to bring in new constitutional and legal reforms to define the role of the army, police and the opposition?
These elections took place because there was a coup attempt that was supported by the DC and the LCD to overthrow the prime minister. The elections also took place because the LCD was unhappy with many things that the ABC were doing, including investigating corruption, and a lot of the LCD people were implicated in this corruption scandal. So if it's an LCD and a DC government, it's very unlikely that they're going to be following up on the corruption cases that were being led by the ABC that were implicating them. So that is going to fall off the radar. It is also very unlikely that they are going to do anything to reform the military, because that is what led to the unhappiness in the first place between the Prime Minister and his deputy.
Dipo Motsamai speaking from Pretoria. To Kenya now, where seven former top officials who served in the government of President Daniel Arap Moi in the 1990s have appeared in court in Nairobi on charges in connection with the Anglo-leasing corruption scandal. It's alleged that hundreds of millions of dollars was embezzled using a network of phantom companies. James Shimanyula was in court.
I'm in a Nairobi Magistrates Court, where some of the former ministers as well as business tycoons are about to enter the dock to answer various criminal charges. It's taken 11 years for this case to be brought in court.
Keriako Tobiko, the director of Kenya's public prosecution, commended the accused persons for cooperating with investigators and told the court that he had no objection to their release on bail pending trial.
This matter has been investigated for a long time. They have cooperated with the investigators. They have not fled. But circumstances have now changed. Now they've been charged. It's a whole different ballgame. The accused persons do deposit their travel documents in court and do not travel out of jurisdiction without seeking specific authorization.
Kioko Kilukumi, one of the lawyers defending the accused, is of the opinion that unnamed top politicians are behind the push for the accused to be prosecuted.
There is no doubt that there is political pressure to charge these individuals. The consideration cannot just be evidence. 11 years is such a long period that it must have been political consideration that swayed the decision whether or not to prosecute.
Samuel Makandi, a 34-year-old Nairobi teacher who was among hundreds of ordinary Kenyans who were in court to hear the case against the accused, decried the Kenyan authorities' failure to arraign in court the prime culprits of the scandal.
We are seeing that these are small fish. We want to see the big fish in the dock also, so that we can see at least there is some transparency that is ongoing, there is justice that at least will be done at the end of the day. So we want to see the big fish, not the small fish alone, because they could not do this without being authorized by the big men.
Another Kenyan 44-year-old land surveyor, Masinde Odongo, said the accused persons were brought to court at an appropriate time.
For a very long time, Kenyans have been yearning to know exactly what happened, who stole the billions of money that it's alleged the individuals who have been arrested stole. So it has been a case of confusion, the public waiting, the government promising. But at last, we now want to see, once it comes to the trial stage, what happens. Are these guys guilty or they are not?
While Kenyans will wait for a while to know whether or not the accused are guilty or not, it may be important to point out that Anglo-leasing scandal involved huge sums of funds paid to shadowy foreign and local companies for services ranging from forgery-proof passports to naval ships and forensic laboratories, which were later discovered to be phantom. The scandal came to light in April 2004 when questions were raised in Kenya Parliament about why the government overpaid on the tender of the new generation passports.
James Shimanyula. And now let's catch up with the Crossroads generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there. Time for a new episode of our radio series, Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future starts today.
So much has been happening lately in the lives of our young heroes that I almost don't know where to start. There is 19-year-old Dan, who's finally found a new job.
Ladies' bags, beautifulest ladybugs, new ladies' handbags, everyone unique.
I like the mix of colors and the texture. Mm. In fact, I've never seen one of these before. What are they made of?
A good salesman never reveals his secrets.
But Dan was selling his bags on the streets illegally, and he ended up having to run away from the city police. 18-year-old Mercy is closely linked to Dan. He is the father of her daughter, Linda. But Dan didn't take responsibility when Linda was born, so Mercy cut him out of their lives. The fact that she has a child has created problems between her and her boyfriend, Nikki. But lately, Nikki seems to have made his peace with that.
I just said I want to marry you. Please, think about it, Mercy, okay?
Mercy is at university studying journalism, as are her friends Tina and Trudy. The last we heard of Trudy, someone had sneaked into her room under cover of darkness.
Where is the material? You know what I'm talking about? Don't move, just tell me.
I swear, I don't.
I said don't move.
What happened? Let's start right away to find out. This 20th episode is entitled Gone.
Come on, pick up the phone.
Hello?
Mukaraba, boss, finally. I need your help.
Is it done? Did you get the material?
No, I...
Then why are you calling me?
Listen, Mukaraba. Something went terribly wrong. The girl is dead.
What? What happened?
She didn't want to give me anything. She said she had no material. But then she moved and I panicked and...
You idiot!
It was an accident. I thought she was about to run for help. And you told me to do whatever it takes and...
All right. Okay. Where are you now?
I'm in the car, next to the university building.
Listen, get the hell away from there. Drive now.
Yes.
And don't call me on this line again. Do you hear?
Yes.
I'll find a way to get in touch.
Okay. City police seem to be everywhere. Dan, you really have to watch out. Oops!
Hey, you! Watch where you're going, young man!
I'm sorry, madam.
Where are you rushing to anyway? There are other people using the streets here, boy.
I am sorry. I really didn't mean to bump into you.
And what are those bags you're carrying? Did you steal them from someone?
No, madam. Absolutely not. Actually, I sell them on the streets. I am not a thief.
So why are you running around all scared like that?
It's a long story, but I swear to you, those bags are mine. I made them myself.
Really? Can I have a look at the yellow one here?
No problem.
They look really nice. What are they made of?
I use discarded plastic bags, and then I knit them.
Are you serious? You mean these cute little handbags are made from plastic bags? From waste?
Yes, but of course, they are all clean now.
I'll take 3. How much are they?
50 each.
Okay.
Thanks. Here are your handbags.
Wow. My friends are going to be so jealous. You know what? These are way too good to be sold on the streets like this, running away from the police. What's your name?
Dan Kanyama.
Well, Dan, I am Mrs. Jumbe. I would very much like to discuss business with you. Here's my card.
Wow. Thanks. You said Jumbe?
Yes, why?
Oh, nothing. Just that I used to go to school with a boy called Nikki Jumbe.
You know Nikki?
Yes. Are you...
He's my son. What a coincidence. Who knew that I would bump into Nikki's friend? I'm just about to go and meet him. Should I tell him to call you?
Oh, well, we weren't really the best of friends. Anyway, it was good meeting you, Mama Nikki. I have to go now.
Hey, call me, okay?
The
Thanks for picking me up from the health clinic, Nikki. And I bet your mom is happy too that she doesn't have to walk home with all her shopping bags.
Nikki, park close to the front door so your dad doesn't have to walk too far.
Mom, Dad's supposed to walk and exercise. That's what everybody's been telling him.
Stop being dramatic, my wife. I'm fine. I may have diabetes, but I do still have 2 feet.
Okay, we're here. If you don't need anything else, I think I'll go back to the university tonight.
Stop sulking, Nikki. Is it still because of that girl? I'm just looking out for you. I don't want you to do something you'll regret in future.
You still treat me like an 8-year-old.
Come on, Nikki. Use your brain. She has another man's child.
Mercy's daughter's name is Linda. And for your information, her real dad, that idiot Dan, walked out on her.
Dan? Dan Kanyama?
That's right. He left her. But I'm going to be there for both of them. Linda will be part of our family when Mercy and I get married.
What?
That's right. You heard me. I'm going to marry Mercy, and there's nothing you can do about it. I've already asked her.
Are you out of your mind?
No, Mom. I'm perfectly fine.
All right. That's enough, both of you. Nikki, have you thought about this? This is a huge responsibility.
I know what I'm doing, Dad.
Oh, I can't listen to this nonsense any longer.
Thanks for helping me do the shopping, Mercy.
No problem, Mom. So, tell me, when is my little sister Joy coming to live with you?
I have an appointment with social services tomorrow, and then we'll see.
That sounds good.
Mercy, there's something I need to talk to you about.
Yes?
I don't know how to tell you this, but with Joy coming here, I just don't know how I can handle both her and Linda. It'll be too much. With your 2 brothers around as well.
I know. I've been thinking about that too. But we might be able to find a solution. Maybe when... if Nikki and I...
Are you saying you've been thinking about his proposal?
I think about it all the time. I'm so confused, Mom. I don't know what to do.
Do you want to marry him?
His mother really doesn't like me.
But you're marrying Nikki, not his mother.
You're right. Sorry, I have to take this.
Sure.
Hello?
Mercy, it's Tina.
Hi, Tina. What's up? You sound so serious.
Something has happened to Trudy.
What? What happened?
Oh, Mercy.
Tell me, what happened? Is she okay?
No, she's not okay. Mercy. I don't know how to say this.
What?
Can you come here?
Tina, please. What's wrong?
She's...
What?
She's dead.
No. I don't believe it. Please tell me she's okay.
Mercy, Trudy's gone.
Please. No, you're lying. Trudy's not dead. She can't be dead.
Mercy.
She can't be dead.
Mercy, please. Come here so that you can talk. There's something else you need to know.
No, she can't be dead.
Mercy.
No.
Mercy.
And with that sad news, we end today's episode of Crossroads Generation. What else does Tina want to tell Mercy? Maybe her latest video diary will give us a clue. You'll find it at dw.de/LBE. You can also follow us on Facebook. Bye for now.
Our main stories here on Africa Link. South Sudan's warring parties have until today to form a unity government as a mediator's deadline expires. And Lesotho's main opposition party has announced it will form a coalition government with several smaller parties. We welcome your comments on this programme. You can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.